know, in a close interpersonal way. Again, occasioned by the nature of the contagion that we're working with. And so, while all of this is completely understandable, I notice that what's been happening for me is a feeling of a certain degree, perhaps, of imbalance, a feeling kind of weighted down by circumstance and by the kinds of things that naturally come up in the mind during this time. And began to really sense a felt need to see if there is some way to create a larger and more whole picture of what's being experienced from the standpoint of Buddha Dharma, both in terms of the teachings of the Buddha and certainly in my own life, and I think probably this will resonate with a lot of Sangha members as well. So like I was saying a little earlier, this retreat that just came off with Sharon and Joseph fully acknowledged the difficulties that arise with the times that we're going through right now and how to bring the Dharma to bear on. But at the end of their retreat, it was the same thing. There is this emphasis that reemerged on how to put this in a larger perspective, how to remember the totality of the Buddha's teachings, and particularly the fact that the path that he taught is about the ongoing manifestation of happiness and spiritual freedom. And he lived in a time when there were horrible wars going on and people were dying of all kinds of diseases that we found ways to cure a very long time ago. So the times that he lived in were not without strife. And yet he taught the path of freedom, and he taught the path of the spiritual happiness that is experienced along the way. So that's the sort of theme I'd like to bring to the fore this evening. First, from a few things that we've taught about joy and the cultivation of joy and spiritual practice, and then doing some of those practices, and then maybe reflecting on them together. So some of the kind of misconceptions about Buddha Dharma that I think probably many of us may have encountered at the beginning personally, or that are certainly abroad in the land for those that don't really have a full grasp of what these teachings are about, is this attitude of sort of no pain, no gain. You know, if it doesn't hurt, you're not doing it right. So if you're not experiencing suffering, you're sort of cheating somehow. But in fact, much of the purpose of meditative practice is just training the mind to see what's there. And the problem is that we spend a lot of our time and effort trying to deny or avoid that which is difficult to acknowledge. And when we do so, when we do decide to just let go and be with whatever arises, oftentimes what arises are things that we didn't particularly want to look at in the first place. And that can result in a kind of a warped sense of self. Another sort of misconception or misunderstanding, I think, is the idea that cultivating spiritual happiness is somehow artificial, or it's somehow a form of resistance to accepting the universality of suffering in the world. But what that view tends to not acknowledge is the fact that the mind is actually a lot of the time cultivating dukkha as a default option. Whatever difficult emotions or thought that arise, you know, there's this tendency toward proliferation, this fear that whatever really difficult state of of mind as it being occurring right now is going to sort of last forever and probably get worse along the way. So the cultivation of joy, the deliberate creative conditions favorable for the arising of joy, is again a way to simply acknowledge the other, but find a way to balance it out with the richness of sort of letting go. And another misconception from the outside with regard to Buddha Dharma is the notion that Buddhism is all about suffering. It's about opening to the reality of suffering and, you know, experiencing it fully and learning how to live with it with as much dignity and grace as possible. But in fact, in the Buddha's teachings, he had three different words for three different kinds of dukkha, three different forms of dissatisfaction. But he talked about seven kinds of happiness. And he specifically focused on four forms of spiritual joy. And those are the ones that I would like for us to kind of focus our attention on a little bit now. So the four forms of joy that he talked about, in one form or another in his teachings, he frequently resorted to the same metaphor when teaching about spiritual joy. And the metaphor that he used was that of a lake or a big pond in a forest. And rather than there being streams flowing into the lake that create the water source, that create the lake or the body of water, the source of water for the lake is an artesian well, a well at the bottom of the lake where the water is coming up into the lake under pressure, kind of flowing upward out of the earth. And so the Buddha talked about four different kinds of spiritual joy. One form is pamoja. And pamoja means happiness or joy dependent on external conditions. So, for instance, if you have somebody give you a present that you hadn't, and the present is something that you hadn't told anybody that you wanted, but it's something that it turns out you really like, really appreciate. And one of the reasons that you like and appreciate it so much is because that person, that friend, knew you well enough to give you something that you hadn't asked for, but that they knew you would really enjoy, you would really like. And so that's one example of happiness dependent on external conditions. Someone seeing into you and seeing something that they could do for you or to give you that they knew would make you happy. And in the Buddha's metaphor of the lake, he likens pamoja to a breeze blowing over the surface of the lake, okay, and ruffling the water. So the excitement that's happening in the lake is dependent on external circumstances, something that came your way from outside. A second form of spiritual joy or happiness that the Buddha spoke about is piti. Pali word is P-I-T-I, usually translated as rapture, or sometimes pleasant well-being. Okay, but it has a distinct physical component to it. So, when people are in different stages of very deep samadhi, they may experience physically this rapture, a sense of an upwelling of energy flowing up through the body from the root chakra, you know, energizing the body, making it feel intensely alive. And the simile he used for that, again, was this upwelling, this artesian spring, this energetic water flow coming up from within, coming up from one's contact with the earth. So that's a form of joy that is bioenergetic almost. It's flowing up into the body through our connection with the earth. So it has that really kind of earth element aspect to it. But it's definitely a source of both physical and mental joy. I'm just feeling really jazzed. And in fact, some people get that sense, that rush from hearing a piece of music that really touches them, for instance. Another form of joy, the Pali word is sukha, S-U-K-H-A. And sukha is sometimes translated as selfless joy, or the joy of letting go, the joy of the softening or relaxation of sense of self. It can be sort of a feeling of unity. So in the Buddhist simile, again, of the water in the lake, if piti is this upwelling of energetic flow that is filling the lake and filling it with, you know, oxygenated, life-giving water, then sukha is the broader body of water in the lake. So as the water flows up from the artesian well and flows outward in all directions, then eventually, even though there's the energy going on within the body, the surface of the lake is calm and placid. So there's a sense of peace and ease, as well as a kind of a gentle joy that's associated with this feeling of sukha. And then the fourth form of joy that Buddha talked about is mudita, sometimes called altruistic joy. One way of understanding mudita is this is the sukha, the joy flowing out in all directions, that wants to be shared. In other words, a wish that others may feel the same sense of gentle, selfless happiness, or calm abiding that you do. And then seeing when others are experiencing that, feeling that, warming your own heart as well, gladdening your heart, as the Buddha would talk about it. So it's like the calm water reaching the shore and nourishing all things. So the four forms of joy, pamoja, piti, sukha, and mudita. So what we're going to do now is a guided meditation where I'm going to use the same similes the Buddha did, and we're going to envision the arising and the experiencing of these four forms of joy. And then after that, we'll provide some more context from the Buddha's teachings and also from some of the things that I picked up from teachings of Sharon in particular. So let's find our sitting posture again, if we can. Settling in, getting centered, and at ease. Allowing the eyes to gently close, the attention to come to rest on the breathing. Begin now to experience your body. Is that calm and placid lake that the Buddha spoke of, that he described in his teachings, that is fed by water flowing up from the bottom of the lake, flowing up through your root chakra, the place where your body meets the earth. Drawing this energy of the earth up into the body. And feeling this flow of earth energy moving up the spine, being drawn upward and upward with each in-breath. Like an upwelling with fresh water flowing up the spine, being drawn up with each in-breath. And then as it rises up the spine with each in-breath, the fresh water flows forth in all directions with each of your out-breaths. Drawing the liquid flowing energy of the earth up the spine with each in-breath, feeling it rise, and then allowing it to flow forth with each exhalation. Rising and outward flowing. Arising and flowing. Then realizing that from the lake's bottom there are other upwellings as well. Those of us sitting together in this Dharma Sangha this evening, liquid flowing energy of the earth flowing up through each of us and then flowing outward to touch the other. Upward flowing, outward flowing. Upward rising and outward flowing. So this energetic flow fills our bodies and touches those around us. Flowing in all directions, touching each other, until we become one vast body of water, all drawing forth the energy of the earth, the joy that lies within us, and then sharing it. Rising and flowing. Otherwise inclined. Allowing these waters of gentle joy to flow out in all directions, so that even as we feel this bubbling joy within, it extends outward to all around us with calm ease and abiding. Wishing that others may experience this joy as well. This gentle joy in the heart mind. The rising joy within us that wishes to be shared. And being touched by those around us, wishing us well. Wishing us ease of well-being. Rising and flowing. Feeling this gentle, joyous energy flowing through the body and outward in all directions, and yet experiencing it with ease and peace of mind. May I open to the joy that lies within me and be happy. Being nourished by the earth with each in-breath. And sharing that joy with each out-breath. May we all know inner joy and be happy. live in joy and in health. Though subject to affliction, live in joy and in peace, even among those who are troubled. Live in joy and in love, even among those who hate. Look within. Be still. Free from fear and attachment. Know the sweet joy of the way. So, when Sharon talks about the cultivation of these forms of joy, she discusses first the things that make it possible to do this practice, and then the things that get in the way, make it difficult. So when these practices of feeling this upwelling of joy, of the contentedness that can kind of come with it, the wish to share that sense of abundance, or of transmitting the energy of the earth to another. She said that things that make that possible to do is if you're feeling a sense of connection with other beings, and that's actually one of the translations of the word metta that she said she finds herself using more and more. It's just the sense of being a part of something greater from yourself and wishing that all beings may be well in this great vast net of which we're a part. She said when you're feeling a sense of inner abundance, that there is a sense of generosity, this feeling that you want to share what it is that's going on. And also being able to recognize happiness when it arises, whether it's seeing it arise in yourself or seeing it arise in another, and just being reminded of the reality of the existence of happiness when in fact it's there. So, conversely, what are the things that can sometimes make it difficult to do this practice? And in the cultivation of these mind states or any of the Brahmaviharas, for me, there are times when it feels mechanical and empty, and when I'm feeling anything but these states of mind that somehow or another I'm seeking to create conditions favorable for the arising of. It can feel artificial and forced, and a useful simile for me when I find myself in those positions is like, let's suppose you're walking along the trail in the high country, and you come to a hillside where maybe there's been a rock slide. And so let's say you're working on a trail maintenance crew. So you get out your shovel and your pick, and you clear away the rock slide, and you reinforce the uphill side and the downhill side of the trail, so it's easy to get through. And it's hot, dirty, grungy work, and you don't walk very far that day because you're repairing the trail. Or you might be walking through a forest and you come to a place where there was a big blowdown. There's trees all over the trail and in the way, and so then you have to stop and get out your saw and put in a lot of effort, once again, clearing the trail. And then there are other times when you're just hiking along and it's a breeze. So whether it turns out to be effortful and you don't feel like you're making much headway, or other times the effort's all the same, it's all skillful, as long as you don't give yourself too hard a time about what you're doing. So Sharon talks about things that get in the way, and she talks a lot actually based on her own experience. She says being judgmental, whether of another or of yourself, that is one thing that really is problematic, because it creates a sense of separation and of isolation and of being disconnected and being unrooted. She says discrimination, the sense of being happy for some but not for others, that there is as many people you're keeping out of your heart as there are that you're letting in. Any other state of mind that creates the sense of isolation or of separateness that can get in the way. So she talked a little bit about her own strategies for working with those impediments when they arise. And one story she told was a favorite cartoon strip of hers. It was an episode from many years ago in the cartoon Peanuts. And one of the routines that happened in Peanuts a lot was Lucy putting out her chair and her desk and putting up a sign that says psychiatric help, 5 cents, right? So she, and then the little sign saying the doctor is in. And so Charlie Brown comes to visit her. And he said, you know, I know I've got a problem, but I'm not even really sure what it is. And Lucy says, Charlie Brown, the problem with you is that you're you. So he says, oh, what do I do about that? And her response is, you know, I don't solve problems, I just point them out. So Sharon said that she has actually decided to name that self-judgmental voice Lucy, in much the same way that that the Buddha named his self-critical voice Mara. Right, so she said, you just really got to recognize it for what it is when it arises, and recognize, I don't know, the silliness of it, you know, that it's just not worth taking too seriously. You know, you open up the funny papers and there it is. The problem with you is either you. So you recognize that that's what the mind happens to be telling you, and that it's deluded, and it's easier to see that it's deluded if you can see the humor in it. You know, Ayakema used to say, without joy, meditation doesn't stand a chance, and that humor is really important to helping see our circumstance, and especially the extent to which the unawakened and discursive mind can, you know, it's the voice of Lucy, right? That we ascribe authority to and then believe. So her advice, and she does give advice, you know, found it to be very good advice over the years, is that when you see those impediments arising, you know, to recognize them for what they are, to recognize the fact that they are, in fact, a source of suffering, and it's self-induced suffering. You know, the Buddha talked about the three forms of dukkha, one being the fact that we are living in this body that is subject to aging, infirmity, and death. Another being that the mind is disinclined to accept change. It's a very source of dukkha. And then the form of dukkha associated with the conjuring up of and belief in the existence of the self. And so it's that last one that the Buddha said, you know, I can't make the other stuff go away. It's just something that arises and changes and passes away because we're in bodies and we're social beings. But he said the third one, when I talk about cessation of suffering, or cessation of dukkha, of dissatisfaction, of existential distress, that's the one I'm talking about. And that one is subject to investigation, to deep understanding and insight, to the generation of self-compassion. And then with the self-compassion comes a certain degree of letting go. That's what Sharon's talking about. When the letting go begins to occur, the sense of connection begins to be made manifest. It begins to show itself. You know, I can't remember if I told the story in our sangha or not about a few years ago when I happened to be at the University of Oregon in Eugene to give a talk at the law school. And my wife and I went out to this very famous regional bird restoration center, and they specialize in doing restoration work on raptors, of falcons and hawks and owls and buzzards, eagles, and there are all these magnificent birds in these cages. And so I'd recently acquired an extremely capable camera for doing wildlife photography, and we'd go around to each of these cages, and I had on set on auto, and so I'd start taking pictures of all the birds, and then I looked at my pictures after a while, and I had a really nice set of pictures of wire mesh, not a bird. And that's because it was set on auto. And so what it was focusing on was the wire mesh. And so I was like, oh, wow, maybe I should read the book. You know, I figured out how to set it to manual so I could adjust the focal length, you know. And then lo and behold, all of a sudden, you know, I changed the focal length and the wire mesh would disappear. And there was the bird in all of its glory. And so for me, learning, really allowing to come in this aspect of this teaching about, you know, if you're either, the mind's either focused on the sense of isolation and separateness, or then suddenly you change the focal length and it's like, oh, okay, now I see. There's the connection. There's the interactivity. Here's that. Oh yeah, okay. That's where the joy comes from. That's how it wants to be shared. That's how it works. And it's this insight of this realization that comes when we look at how the mind is in fact creating the sense of isolation and separateness. And that when we see that's what the mind's doing, then the compassion automatically begins to flow forth, and with the compassion comes the beginning to let go of the sense of self that's kept us separate. So it's not the suffering that's redemptive in Buddhism, it's the openness to being with whatever arises. You know, the joy as well as the sadness, you know, like the Taoists and the Xuan Buddhists called the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. that once we're equally open to them all, the earth becomes much more kind of vibrant and interesting place to live. So, you know, with the coming of the spring and the change in the weather, the opportunity to spend more time out of doors, opportunity maybe to start experimenting with being a little closer to others. I see this tendency in society right now for those who have been so burdened by, frightened by, and frustrated by the physical distancing. There's this strong desire to pretend like, oh, the worst is over, we can just get back in the saddle again and live the way we've been living before. And all the epidemiologists saying, don't go there, don't do that, we'll just bring it around again, maybe even worse. So we've got to go forth in a way that respects and honors life, and that in a way that where we, I think, can really need to continue to do everything we can to take care of each other, realizing that interconnection in our personal behavior, but to the extent it's possible to start getting back out in the world, spend more time with each other if at a safe distance. You know, there really is room for an opportunity for, I think, hope and the recognition of the joy when it arises. Those who bind themselves to joy do the winged life destroy. Those who kiss the joy as it flies live an eternity sunrise. Okay, so anybody have any thoughts or reflections that they may want to share? Not many of what I've said. Just call in the evening if you want to. Anyone have anything they'd like to share?
I do. Just one thing, minor thing, but I was talking to my close friend and teacher. Normally I just call people. I don't do the FaceTime. And last time we did the FaceTime and I felt a stronger connection than it just talking. And when we did that, I just went, you know, I think I will do that on purpose because it fosters a little bit more sense of a connection and you could get more a sense of the emotion and what's going on in their face or facial features and, you know, and so forth. Yeah,
me too. I find that I really prefer that when it's possible. Yeah, good. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jim. I just went through the list of people. I mean, I went through the pictures of everyone, and it was really so good to see everyone. And I was so taken by the picture of Joe with his little daughter in his lap. That was so sweet.
That was pretty sweet.
That picture for sure. And being the
dad, she's quite the meditator.
She got down. She was omen. I did start to send a text to everyone. When you were telling the Charlie Brown Lucy story, I was just going to send the text, "Oh, good grief."
Well, that's kind of what we're sharing now, isn't it? Some good grief. It's true.
Well, one other thing that I would say, oops, is...
Oh, it's not his daughter. Maybe it's a practice daughter.
One other thing I would say, Lloyd, is rather than meeting in a neutral space like the church, we see people in their home, you know, and I have the background, but, you know, that's another way that you get a little bit more sense of people, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I've been appreciating that as well. Yeah. It's good. We're all at home together. Well, my friends, there's nothing to say we can't call it an evening if we want to. It's just about dusk out there, so we can all go wrap it up by enjoying what nature has to share with us tonight. Maybe we could settle in one last time just for one last minute of sitting. And I'll repeat the Buddhist phrases on joy. Live in joy and in health, but subject to affliction. Live in joy and in peace, even among those who are troubled. Live in joy and in love, even among those who hate. Look within, be still, free from fear and attachment. Know the sweet joy of the way. Good week, everybody.
Thank you, Lloyd. That was wonderful.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks, Lloyd.
Good night.
Lloyd?
Yes.
Maybe now or maybe next time you could talk more about Lloyd Terra and
yeah.
What your thinking and feeling is about that and opening to that. I'm assuming it's a kind of opening to that aspect of yourself.
I'd be happy to do so, yeah, because it goes to some really interesting issues around identity. Because as I've been coming forth more in my feminine aspect for the last couple of years or so, I'm finding it's really been a powerful experience to be in environments where I'm fully accepted. And my alternative presentation, whether that's in support groups at the VA, there's a support group, the Center on OPEC I go to, and the Sangha actually has been a place where I've really felt, you know, accepted and supported, and I certainly feel it just in terms of our being in touch, but there is something about all kind of being in the same room together that I miss. So definitely, I appreciate your asking. I'd love to give a talk about it, and I think there are ways we can broaden it all to the inquiry into the nature of identity for all of us when we don't have nearly as much opportunity as we usually do to convey who we consider ourselves to be in different social contexts. Good. Appreciate your asking.
Thanks.
See y'all soon.
Bye.
Hey, Lloyd, can you tell me what you'd like to call the talk?
Okay. Contagion and joy. Good night, everybody.
Maybe it's time after that would be pandemonium pandemic.
Yes, that works.
Okay, good night.
Good night.